Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, full disclosure, folks, day two of the 2021 Australian Open wasn't as much of a banger as day one. In full fairness, it had a tough act to follow, but it didn't quite live up to that act. But we're going to do our very best to overcompensate with today's tennis podcast.
It was Crocodile Dundee 2, wasn't it, really?
No, absolutely not. That is not an appropriate analogy. I've just promised that we'll compensate, David, and make this a banger of the podcast, and you've just slagged off a truly great, if in retrospect, a little bit racist film.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Yeah, it didn't quite hit the heights of yesterday. There's still interest in there, and we'll be talking about all of it. A number of talking points that have been raised, but in terms of big results, standout matches, Shapovalov Sinner's type stuff, Andreescu comeback type stuff. There's none of that. I don't think there'll be any action superhero movie analogies today.
Yeah, that was one of the great titles of a podcast that we've had. So well done to you both for coming up with that. I didn't come up with that one. What was it again?
Avengers Assemble. WTA Avengers Assemble.
Oh,
I mean, they'll be reassembling tonight.
Yeah.
And on Wednesday.
Yeah. I mean, that was what I was going to say. I think, yes, today was worse, but I think we probably expected it to be worse. It does have the two slightly weaker sides of the draw, I would say, overall. There's fewer matches popping off the page when you look at that order of play. As you said, there's still some interest, but the real bangers are on the odd days. The even days are perhaps going to be a little bit slower. That's okay.
Yes. More pressure on us to create the interest.
I'm ready.
Crumble is our mascot, by the way. She will continue to be our mascot throughout this fortnight. Crumble content, I'm sure, will be forthcoming in the coming days.
Jim.
Poor Jim used all his Australian merch last year.
Yeah. How much more Australia paraphernalia can a man acquire? I don't know. Consider that a gauntlet laid down, Jim. But where should we start? Where would you like to start? Yesterday I had big plans to go chronologically, and then Shapovalov and Sinner threw those plans across the room.
I think we could go chronologically, actually, because it sort of wasn't Azarenka fairly near the start of the day, and that feels like the biggest story to me, don't you?
Well, if we're going chronologically, then she's not quite the first story. If we're going chronologically, then I think we kick off with Sofia Kenin starting her title defence. First time she's ever defended a Grand Slam title. She played Madison Inglis, who there's no point in me trying to pretend that I knew anything about her, because everyone that listened to yesterday's pod will know that I had to ask Matt what her first name was. So she
you
played
got it right eventually.
She played Madison with two D's Inglis. That's what I know about her. And Kenin won in straight sets. But the scoreline does not tell the story of the match. The story of the match is that she was nervous. And we know that Kenin gets nervous before matches, before any match, really. She talks quite openly about how, you know, she's sometimes in tears in the locker room before matches. She certainly was before both her Grand Slam finals last year. But yeah, she she came into the press conference afterwards and she just kept saying, sort of slightly sheepishly, obviously I was really nervous, which was quite endearing, really. And yeah, you know, it was a massive, massive deal for her. And she obviously wanted to try and enjoy it. And I think also the pressure to try and enjoy something like that brings with it its own nerves. And you feel like, oh God, I'm too nervous to enjoy it. And then you stop beating yourself up. Listen to me pretending like I have any idea what it's like being in that kind of situation. She plays Kaia Kanepi next. And I found this quote from Kenin really interesting. And look, we all know how dangerous Kanepi can be to anyone, regardless if you're head to head with her. But Kanepi beat her in the previous match in Rome in 2018, which if I were Kenin, I'd think, well, that doesn't mean anything. That was 2.5 years ago and I've won a Grand Slam and reached another final since then. Sophia Kenin said, after my match, I came off court, saw that Kanepi was winning and I broke down a little bit because obviously I remember that I lost to her.
Oh, dear. I do love the fact that Sophia Kenin tells us stuff like this, yeah, though. And I love the fact that she owns and admits to her nervousness and the reasons for it. I can't think of too many that do this that will be just blatant about it. I am really tight. I desperately, desperately don't want to muck up my title defense in the first round, and therefore I'm really tight as a drum. And she just tells you that and lays it all bare and then goes and, what is it that Mary Carrillo says? Chokes and wins anyway. It's a really appealing side to Sophia Kenin.
Yeah, and I'm sure it isn't as calculating as this, but because she does tell you that she's nervous, when she manages to overcome those nerves, that almost becomes like a super strength on the court. And the opponents must think, well, I know she's struggling because she's told us she is, and yet she's still managing to play through it, still managing to find ways to win. How do you crack her if she's admitted to struggling and yet still managing to win? Yeah, I mean, her tennis was all over the place, really, today. She didn't play well. She did enough to sneak through, I think, 7-5, 6-4. She does strike me as someone who's vulnerable early in this tournament. And obviously, Kanepi lurking in the next round is the major obstacle for her. If she can find her feet, I think she becomes dangerous, a little bit like we saw at the French Open, where she was really struggling and then ended up making it through to the final. So she's an easy player to overlook, I think, Kenin. For example, I don't think any of us really have her featuring really in the second half of this tournament, but we wouldn't have had her featuring in the second half of the tournament last year probably either. She's a very difficult one to figure out where exactly she is at any given moment.
And I think all that is even more true given what David has already given the game away a little bit about, which is that her quarter of the draw has blown wide open overnight, because we've seen losses for Victoria Azarenka and Maria Sakkari, who I think all of us had in, that is Billie Jean walking across my laptop, who I think all of us had in our at least quarterfinal lineup. I had her in my semi-final lineup as well. And despite all of us saying in the preview show that Kristina Mladenovic was a nasty draw and always a banana skin, none of us saw her beating Maria Sakkari coming. And certainly none of us saw Jessica Pegula beating Victoria Azarenka coming, which is what happened overnight. Two very different losses. Azarenka had to stop play at a set and 2-4 down as she was having, it looked like, difficulty breathing. She had an off-court medical timeout, went on to lose in straight sets. When she was asked about that that incident and the medical issue after the match, she got quite angry about it and said, you've got no right to ask us and expect us to disclose our any medical information, and said there should be a rule change in order that they don't have to disclose anything medical. I'm not saying there isn't sort of a grain of a point in there potentially, or that some might not agree with her, but I suspect she was incredibly crestfallen and pissed off after that loss. She spent 2 weeks in hard quarantine. She US Open finalist, riding high. You know, she made big sacrifices to come to this tournament. There was a time not that long ago when she wouldn't travel if she couldn't have her son Leo with her. So it was a real sign of commitment that she, I mean, obviously with the time she decided to come, she didn't know it'd be a hard quarantine, but she knew it would be a quarantine. So after all of that, to lose in round number one must be a tough pill to swallow. And similarly, Sakkari, although that was more of a kind of tennis-based loss to Kristina Mladenovic, she also was one of those that was in hard quarantine. Mm-hmm. And this is probably a trend that we need to be discussing now.
Yeah, they're totting up these players that are just tailing away in matches, or even, I agree with you, I mean, Mladenovic outplayed Sakkari overall, although there was a 6-love Sakkari set in the middle of that. But physicality will contribute to that. Preparation will contribute to that, you would expect. And I feel, I mean, she was very fair and to her opponent in what she said afterwards, but she also said, I couldn't handle the pressure, and she has struggled to deal with those situations in the past. But I think we are seeing the effects of bubble life generally, of quarantine, of hard quarantine in these players' cases. And it's not easy. This is not natural. And it would be unfair of us, I think, to just watch this tennis and judge it on 2020 standards from a year ago. The circumstances are different, and there are going to be some lopsided and weird losses from time to time. It must be pretty miserable tonight in Melbourne for those two.
Andrew, who's running our overnight Twitter feed this week, ran the numbers on the hard quarantined players on the opening day, and the men were 2 wins, 12 losses, with the 2 wins coming against fellow hard quarantine players.
And that's a heck of a stat right there.
Yeah, it really is. And I think Pam Shriver said that the hard quarantine would affect the men more than the women. One of the reasons being the 5 sets. And we had a very small sample size at the US Open, but Guido Pella was in 14-day quarantine ahead of the US Open. And I remember he came out and played his first match, I think maybe a day or two after he'd just come out, and he lost to JJ Wolf in straight sets and was really under par. So there was a little inkling there that the men would find it difficult. And the women on the opening day were 5-5. I'm not sure of the breakdown in terms of whether they were up against fellow hard quarantine players. And also, I guess, you know, there's more analysis you could do on that in terms of higher ranked opponents and that sort of thing. Worth saying that Kontaveit, Ann Lee, Andreescu, Kosteya, Rybakina, all still in the draw, all won a first round, all also in hard quarantine. So I think we'll get a clearer picture at the end of the tournament, but it certainly does seem to be a trend. And today it's really stood out because it's Sakkari and Azarenka. Because I don't know about you, but when I looked at the draw and we were making our predictions, they were due to meet in the third round. And I thought that was a hugely consequential match in the whole tournament. You know, the winner would have a good chance of going on and reaching a deep round in this tournament. So I would say, Yeah, of course, Kiki Mladenovic can upset anyone. Jessica Pegula has been knocking on the door a little bit.
That's the win of her life, isn't it?
It really is.
A heck of a win for her.
Yeah.
She played really, really well.
She's coached by Venus Williams' former coach as well, David Witt. So that seems to be a really, really good partnership.
And she was trending nicely last season. I think she reached the third round at the US Open, her best ever Grand Slam performance. Maybe had a couple of wins. I want to say she beat Sabalenka, maybe Brady last year. So she is dangerous, but this is obviously...
Big hitter, isn't she?
This is obviously one of her better ever performances. But what it does mean, I think, is it leaves the already open top half just even more open now. This was the day that it, as you said at the top, Catherine, it really did blow open, and there's chances for a lot of players now to certainly make the second week.
Just finally on the hard quarantine thing, Heather Watson won overnight. She wasn't the Brit that anyone was expecting to score a victory overnight, but she did over Kristina Pliskova, two tiebreak sets as she plays Annette Contaveit next. Just some quotes from her after the match, because obviously Heather Watson was also in hard quarantine. She said, "I didn't feel as fit as usual, which is no surprise. I'm taking care of my body carefully, because 4 days ago my left leg went into spasm and I couldn't finish practicing. I was really worried about if I was going to be able to play my first round here." So obviously, you know, there's more to it than just she won, therefore the fact that she was in hard quarantine isn't affecting her.
Yeah, I sort of thought that, you know, in a way. I could imagine almost blood clots being potentially a possibility in that situation. You've got to keep moving, and yet you've got so little space in which to move for 2 weeks. I mean, she did a 5K run in a room, which is hilarious. But, you know, it's there are funny things to it, but it's also, it does worry me, really, that I hope there aren't consequences both physically and mentally from this period. Even obviously that it's their choice to go on this trip, but still, you know, you hope for the best for them all. By the way, she did really well, I thought, Watson, against Pliskova, who's got that mighty left-handed serve, and it's, you have to hang in so much because balls are whistling past you, and she won in two tie breaks and did a really good job.
Yeah, very impressive, I would say, as was Ash Barty. There was an alert from Matt sent out to our group that a golden set might be on the cards for Ash Barty. That is how good she was. She won 6-love, 6-love, and only lost 10 points.
What's a golden set again?
So a golden set is when you win all the points in a set. Yaroslava Shvedova did it at Wimbledon 2012, I want to say, against Sara Errani, but it is incredibly rare. And yeah, she won the first 16. Of course, when I sent that message, she then lost the very next point. But yeah, I mean, she was flawless, Ash Barty. She is so in control of where the tennis ball is going. It kind of reminded me of what Catherine says to Billie Jean, ball on a string, ball on a string.
It's actually cork on a string.
Oh, okay.
But the principle still applies.
It's like the ball is on a string. She knows exactly where it's going. She's a step ahead of her opponent. And I mean, it was one of those where I really started feeling for Kovanich, because there was no way she could hurt Ash Barty. And it was quite inevitable feeling early on that this was going to be 6-love, 6-love. It was sort of a poetic destruction because it looked really nice.
I love that Barty didn't give her a game, because people might think of Ash Barty as the sort of player that might do that, because, you know, she's so nice and everything. But no, she is ruthless.
Should you?
No.
No. Ludicrous.
Absolutely not.
But it does happen.
I'm not going to get 6-love, 5-love down
like
to you two.
Like you would do that, David.
A chance would be a fine thing. Love to be in that position. I've never led anybody 6-love, 5-love at all. And I've played my 7-year-old.
She plays Gavrilova next, or I think she plays Gavrilova. I wrote that in the notes before Gavrilova had actually won, but I think she has
won. Yeah. And
yes,
I am definitely getting ahead of myself here, because...
Oh, good.
It's still only round one. Well, it's just finished round one. But what is one of our wishes for this tennis season? That the leading players in the women's game all play well at the same time and we get some real rivalries developing and a pack forming at that top of the rankings. And the start of this tournament, all of the players that are in that conversation have delivered what we call statement performances, and Ash Barty was the latest of those. So I am crossing my fingers that they can keep it up. Look, I love upsets and there's certainly a place for them, but I would love a tournament where the final eight is a really, really strong final eight. I said the top half was a little bit more open today. I still believe that with Sakkari and Azarenka going out, but there's still enough players in there that we could get what we're after.
That one quarter, though, it does feature, I think, it's one of four that will get to the eight, isn't it? That are really surprising when you list them all. Pegula,
yes.
Being one.
Yes, that's not the list that I have in my notes, David, so thanks very much. I've got the list of the seeds, the bigger names that could profit from them being lost. So thanks for using that reference point. Appreciate it.
It's the Alina Svitolina eighth. So it's Pegula, Stoza, Hibino, Mladenovic, Putintseva, Van Oytvanck, Goff and Svitolina. One of those will reach the quarterfinals.
Yeah, Goff beat Jill Teichmann during the day session. And Svitolina was very good, beat Marie Bouchkova in two sets. And Svitolina plays Coco Gauff now in round two.
Oh, yes. That was a really good match, Svitolina-Bouchkova.
That's a great match on paper, isn't it?
I was awake for that in the middle of the night, and Bouchkova really pushed Svitolina. It was one of those where they were sort of forcing the other to raise their level, and they kept going with each other and really entertaining match. I was impressed with Svitolina. I think of her as someone who is vulnerable in slams, but I need to stop thinking that because I don't think she is. I think she's only lost before the third round once in the last 4 years. She's pretty reliable. It's actually the second week hurdle that she has yet to overcome. I think about the French Open where, you know, I think we said then it felt a bit now or never for her. But she's in this little eighth of the draw that has slightly broken, so perhaps a chance again. But obviously Goff will be tricky. She was much improved, I think, today from her win over Teichmann last week. She beat her much more easily today and had sorted out her serve a little bit.
Elise Mertens was very good overnight, 1-3 over Leila Fernandez. She has picked up where she left off from winning one of the Cup Trophy Opens from last week. Putintseva, by the way, incidentally, that you mentioned in that open section, she beat Sloane Stephens overnight, which, according to the bookies, apparently isn't a surprise. She was the bookies' favourite going into that match against a former US Open champion, which is a bit of a marker. Joe Konta, sad story for Joe Konta. She had to retire against Kaya Juvan. I know you were commentating on this one, David. An abdominal injury for Joe Konta, which is not something she's prone to at all, according to Anne Gjothervong. You know, she does have parts of her body, the knee, of course, that she gets niggles in, and it's sort of a body part she's hypervigilant about. Her sort of core and abdominals, not that at all. She seemed, and actually she said as much, really in shock about it, actually, in the press conference afterwards, and understandably so. She was asked by Russell Fuller of Five Live about the volume of injuries and retirements in the Australian Open so far, and whether tennis was trying to be, in his words, too ambitious by staging a major global event in the current climate. And she replied very affirmatively, or very firmly rather, we have to be ambitious to keep this sport going. We have to be ambitious. She was really declarative about that, despite clearly being very upset about her own personal situation, which I found very interesting.
I felt for her really today, because she was winning that match. She was knocking on the door of the set on Juvan's serve. didn't take her chances, then served for it herself. And at 15 all, at 5-4 when she was serving, she just went to the umpire and said, I've got to leave the court and get this sorted out, otherwise I can't play. And the trainer came with her. And I did think at the time, maybe it's an abdominal problem, because when you tear a stomach muscle like that, there's no way back. You cannot play through that, because every part of your game relies on that part of your torso. And she was devastated, really. And in relation to her point, I mean, look, I ultimately agree with her that the sport is trying to get by and just get through this period. But it does feel like players are going to be suffering more than they normally would these type of injuries.
Also a defeat for Fran Jones, the British qualifier, against Shelby Rogers. Pretty straightforward victory. I mean, she fought very hard, as we've come to expect from Fran Jones. She was very het up about an automated line call. Of course, they're all automated this tournament, which she's utterly convinced was dodgy. And she says that swung the momentum of the match. I mean, there definitely can be dodgy Hawkeye Live calls, because there was one in the Dan Evans Borna Chorich match. Sorry to bring up this match again, David. I know you've, you know, been through therapy to try and put it behind you and move on. He won overnight, by the way, Borna Chorich. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news. There was
I like Borna. I just that serving routine. Come on, get on with it.
There was a, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a very clearly incorrect Hawkeye Live call in that match, and Borna Chorich just sort of laughed it off and said, oh, of course he's having that point, and gave it to him. And yes, the umpire accepted that. Yeah.
I remember now. Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody just agreed, well, yeah, of course that wasn't the right call, and moved on. It was that clearly incorrect. So, I mean, I'm okay with that, so long as everybody accepts that. It's, you know, we all know there's a margin for error with Hawkeye, and it's automated, so it'll be impartial. So,
it does lead to some slightly strange situations on the big courts where reviews are available, but the problem is they're getting a review from the same technology that called it out. So of course it's just going to be the same. I think mostly they're looking for peace of mind when they ask for a review or a close call, you know, for it to be shown. But it does strike me as a bit strange that they would even waste any energy
offer
on
that. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. I think in their head, they're struggling to accept what they've seen with their own eyes. And they're looking for some sort of backup. But yes, not going to work, that, is it?
Last story from the women's half of the draw. Paula Badosa lost out. A Spanish player lost out to Samsonova overnight, 6-7, 7-6, 7-5. 2-hour, 38-minute match. Badosa had served for it. Utterly heartbreaking loss for her. She had to spend 21 days in hard quarantine because she already was on one of the cursed flights, the passengers of which had to go into 14 days hard quarantine. And during that time, she tested positive for COVID. So I don't think she didn't play any of the warm-up events, had to go straight into a Grand Slam after 3 weeks of hard quarantine, and then lost having served for the match. I mean, yeah, I hope she's got some whiskey or something available in that hotel room that she's already spent far too much time in.
Yeah,
somebody, maybe it's a different hotel room, I don't know.
Somebody buy her a cake. Yeah. Goodness, I mean, you know, she will need cheering up. I mean, I feel I was so sorry for her. I mean, her story as it was going along, it was bordering on farce, the way she was just getting told, sorry, 14 days lockdown. Sorry, you've got to have another 7 in a special place on your own, totally on your own. And then she comes out and she plays this epic and doesn't win. I mean, that's not fair.
Yeah, send puppies and cake to wherever Paula Badosa is right now. Moving on to the men. I've already given the big story away, which is Bonacorich has won. Rafael Nadal also won straight sets. Subscribers to the newsletter, which you all should be. I think John Wertheim is, because he is bigging up Matt on air on the Tennis Channel.
Quite right, too.
Yeah, apparently he is.
Matt woke up in the middle of the night, wasn't intending to. I had stayed up to watch tennis. Matt woke up, glanced at his phone, saw a message from me that just read OMG in caps and thought, better have a look at this. And said, I've just discovered I'm a superstar. So I'm wide awake now.
What I actually thought had happened was Rafael Nadal had withdrawn.
This is far more important.
I thought that's the only thing that would elicit such strength of emotion from Catherine at midnight, or I don't know what time it was, 1 o'clock in the morning, probably.
Oh, I don't know. You're forgetting cheese.
True. There's always cheese. But anyway, no, it's just me getting on Tennis Channel, sort of.
You said, I'm just going back through the messages. It was 12:59 a.m.,
oh, I'm not going to come out of this well.
And Matt said, I wasn't actually planning to be awake now, but I woke up and checked my phone and discovered I'm an international megastar.
And he's a megastar because John Wertheim quoted his amazing stat about Steffi Graf's 42 sets in a row, correct?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. John belter. Did actually get it slightly wrong.
John, what are you doing?
Did he?
Oh, dear.
But thank you very much, John.
He then said, but I might actually go back to sleep now. The schedule's a bit ropey. But you said, but this has been fun.
Yes.
Rafael Nadal did not withdraw and he did not lose. And subscribers to the newsletter will have seen that I predicted him to lose. And I would like to put the disclaimer on there that that's not actually because I thought that he was going to lose to Laszlo Djere. It's because had he lost or retired from that match, I would have scored 240 points, which would have pretty much meant I could have put my feet up and done what I liked for the remainder of the tournament and still beaten David, Matt, Alex, who were taking on this tournament, and Daryl, who were taking on throughout the year. So it was a strategic prediction rather than a, I think this is going to happen. Have I talked myself out of that?
Yeah, and you know, there was only one moment in the match, but there was a moment in the match when I suddenly thought, oh my word, Catherine's going to win 250 points. And Rafael Nadal's going to have to pull out the tournament or he's going to lose the match.
Talk me through it. Why were you awake, David?
Well, I went.
What
to bed
hours did you sleep last night?
I went
night?
To bed at 8:30, and I set my alarm for 4:30, and I woke up at 2:30. So it just happened to come on, and then I was really interested because obviously we've had all the conversation about is Rafael Nadal's back playable? You know, but here he was saying, I am struggling to serve for the last 15 days. I've tried to serve today, he said the other day, didn't he? And he pulled out of all the matches that in the ATP Cup that he was scheduled for. And at that point, about an hour before he was due to get on court, I suddenly thought, Catherine, Matt and I, none of us have picked this guy who's won 20 Grand Slam singles titles. None of us have picked him to reach the quarterfinals here. Mm. What the hell are we doing?
Did Pam Shriver?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I was quite worried about your state, David. You were tweeting in block capitals at 2:45 a.m.
Well, it's the sudden absurdity of it all hit me that we've written off this guy.
Mm.
I got dragged or slayed or something like that. I'm sure Mike Dixon of the Daily Mail doesn't use that sort of terminology, but that's basically what he did, because he did point out to me, how many of the pre-tournament Rafael Nadal press conferences have you been to over the years? Which is actually a fair point, because he does rather undersell his chances and...
Sure, but usually he's played some matches.
Yeah, well, that's what I went on, certainly. And look, in terms of what I saw on the court... He was far from his best. I felt he was kind of shielding his serve in a way. I felt like he was protecting his body a little bit as he served. It didn't look quite the same serve to me. Now, maybe that's me just searching because I'm looking at it very closely, whereas normally I wouldn't. But I didn't. He wasn't convincing in the way he normally is. There was a period where Jerry won 9 points in a row in the first set, and the moment that I mentioned, Catherine, that I thought maybe you might actually get this is he was, I think, 5-3 up and serving for it, and I think Jerry got to 15-40 or something like that, and it just looked really kind of on a knife edge just for a moment that things could turn here. And Nadal got his way out of that little spot and then won quite comfortably. But he's not right. Whether it's something that by having that extra couple of days will clear up is another matter, but certainly not convincing.
Yeah, he's not right. He described that as surviving. He said, I needed to survive and I did, which I've got to say is a bit of a burn for for Laszlo Djere, who's lost 3-4-1. I think I sort of whizzed through and watched it back. I thought it was really noticeable how aggressive Nadal was playing, which I kind of love to watch. But same as you, David, I interpreted that as protecting the serve. He was trying to shorten points. He was really aggressive on the backhand. He admitted after the match that he had adjusted his service motion somewhat, and he was only averaging about 110 miles per hour on the first serve, which, look, I know he's not one of the fastest servers out there, but that's low for him. He's not right. He's still a great, great player, and he can win tennis matches not being quite right, but I still stand by the fact he's not going to win this tournament.
No, not unless that situation clears up. And I suppose the question mark is that doable when he's playing every other day? What did you think, Matt? Did you see any of it?
Yeah, I had the same assessments as you. I think he was fortunate that Djere hasn't got a huge serve himself, because I think Nadal felt comfortable that he would be able to get into Djere's service games every time, basically. And that meant that he didn't have to really go for it quite so much on his own serve. And I agree. I thought he was holding back a little bit. There were a couple of moments where he looked a little stiff, like the match could turn. But I would say I have come out of this slightly more encouraged than I was before it. He's clearly not right, but we knew he wasn't right. The fact he was able to play through it and win is a decent sign. And if it's a muscle thing, which I think it is, he said that is the sort of injury which can quite suddenly clear up and you can be okay. I remember Federer last year, I think it ended up being more of a serious injury, but he thought that his injury that he took into that semi-final against Djokovic could clear up. And he was saying, I just hope it will. And with Nadal, if he can, because it's so early in the tournament, if he can make it through, it's possible he'll be looking stronger in that second week. But there are a few opponents on his path that could that could block him, I think, if he is below par.
Well, incidentally, none of my back injuries just suddenly clear up, but I shall continue to live in hope. The thing is, looking at his draw, and look, all due respect to everybody whose name I'm about to read out and throw under the bus, even subpar, it's hard to see how Nadal won't win through Michael Moe in the next round, and then either Cam Norrie or a bloke who I'm going to have to click on to discover his first name, Roman Safiulin, world number 183 from Russia. So Cam Norrie, who beat Dan Evans overnight, plays Safiulin. And then the winner of that plays the winner of Nadal and Michael Moe. After that, it's potentially Alex de Minaur, which is where I...
Yeah, that's the one.
On the basis of current evidence, see Nadal struggling, because de Minaur will be able to expose physical issues. But if Nadal gets those two matches to play himself in and the back does clear up, then who knows?
Yeah, That's where I'm at as well with it all.
And in the meantime, we'll all research Roman Saphirlin, which we'll definitely call a good second round draw for Cam Norrie.
Roman is a great name.
It is a great name, yes. Like Aslan, which is also quite a common Russian name, people have told me on Twitter. Great. Big fan of Russian names. Cam Norrie beat Dan Evans, 4 sets. You both called it. You said that was really tricky for Cam Norrie. And I was struck by the similarities as I was watching it between Cam Norrie and Yoshihito Nishioka, who beat Dan Evans last year. It's gutting for Dan Evans, that loss, really gutting. He said that this past week is bittersweet for him. Of course, he won the Murray Ocean Road Trophy Cup.
Classic.
Last week, his first ATP title. But he said, I want to do well in Grand Slams. And with due respect to that warm-up tournament, no one will remember I won that in 3 weeks' time. And he said, because of the proximity of winning that first ATP title to the Grand Slam, he said he felt really mentally flat today, which is understandable, I suppose. Mm. And I know some people will think, oh, well, just shake yourself out of it, but it is just not that easy.
It was also clearly in his head because he remarked that Norrie had lost early last week and therefore would have done, in his words, a shed load of practice over the last week. And it was clear in their respective demeanours, both in terms of the way they were carrying themselves physically around the court in the rallies, but also sitting down. Evans was agitated, irritable. Norrie, he's a real competitor, that guy, and he loves the fight, and he knows he's not as talented as Evans, and he kind of gets a buzz out of still winning anyway. You know, even with what he's got, shoveling the ball around sometimes, spanking it down the line and just getting his, you know, Evans did not know how to play that match. He was not sure which tactic. He got a few options. He didn't know which one was the best. And Norrie just had an answer for them all most of the time. He was, even when the scores were level, Evans was hanging on. And it was a really good win, deserved win for Norrie.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
We told you we would attempt to compensate for the slightly less entertaining on-court events overnight. And I think we've done that by David Law using the word spanking. So you're welcome. Obligation fulfilled.
That's what I do with my forehand. Yeah. I don't know where it's going, but
I do hope Dan Evans can gain a little bit of perspective on this last week. In time. I know he's talking there about time making that title win seem even less relevant than it does now, but winning on the ATP Tour for the first time is a pretty big deal. someone who has come close and not done that. That was a significant thing he accomplished last week. And I know it must be irritating that it has impacted his preparation for the Grand Slams. And I'm totally with him on the point that he is now, this is a pattern now of underperforming at Grand Slams. It's been like that for probably just over a year, really, where his slam results haven't matched his tour results. But that was a good victory in that tournament. He beat some quality players in Chorich and Auger Aliassime and Jeremy Shardy to win that. I hope he looks back on that more fondly than he does in the heat of a moment after a Grand Slam exit.
Yeah, I agree, actually. I think people will remember that he won an ATP title. I think there are those that have won an ATP title and those that haven't. And I think that will be a significant achievement next to his name when he retires. Whereas second round of a slam, no. Yeah. I mean, of course, had he reached a quarterfinal, you'd probably exchange that for an ATP title. But, you know, who knows? Matteo Berrettini beat Kevin Anderson in straight sets. Berrettini is on a good run of form. I accidentally went to his press conference, which was almost entirely in Italian.
How did you manage that?
It followed on immediately from Tsitsipas, and I was just sort of there, so I stayed.
Oh, sorry, Matteo. I didn't mean to be here. I'm not interested in you.
And it felt rude to leave. So I sat there through all the Italian. He seemed in very good spirits. He played very well.
Yeah. I think it's much better to accidentally be in a virtual press conference than a real-life press conference.
Oh, yes.
Then you have to ask something.
Yes.
Or you just get up in the middle of it and say, sorry, can you I just need to go. I'm not really interested.
No, you can't do that, David. You and your breaking the unwritten rules of press conferences. It was this time last year that you almost got yourself chucked out of Naomi Osaka's or something, wasn't it?
Yes. With the constant asking of questions without
basically
raising hands.
Basically turned it into a one-on-one.
Was great, though.
Nobody told
me. An audience with David Law and Naomi Osaka.
We were just having a chat. I didn't know.
Rublev won very easily over Hanfman. Medvedev, very easy over Pospisil. Same for Dumanoir over Tennis Angren. If you haven't seen Dumanoir going for the headshot at Tennis Angren.
On match point.
You
nailed him in the face.
You might enjoy it. Tennis Angren is fine, by the way. I'm not cheering on the prospect of him being injured. Alexei Popperin beat bad Superman David Goffin. It's not a great time for David Goffin, is it?
That's become a nickname. I can't believe it. He's become known as bad Superman. Only on here. Maybe it'll spread. Oh,
mate,
no.
John Wertheim will be saying it tomorrow.
Yeah.
You'll be waking Matt up in the middle of the night to tell him.
That was by far the most fun match of the day. I mean, not for David Goffin, obviously, but if you're looking for an atmosphere, that was the place to be today. Popperin coming back to beat Goffin, who had four match points. They were saved with a mixture of really tight play from David Goffin. So many double faults crept into his game in that last hour, probably. And Popperin stepping up and really nailing some winners. It was a really fun match, and just summed up how much fans can make a difference. Popperin was asked in his press conference, would you have won that without fans? And he said, yeah, obviously. And then laughed and said, no, of course I wouldn't. They really helped me through that. And, you know, because he was down a lot and he had to find energy to pick himself up, and they gave him that energy. And yeah,
Goffin is becoming one of those opponents now that gets beaten by people who make themselves a story by beating him. Alcaraz, wasn't it last week?
Yes, yeah. Alcaraz won overnight. Straight set versus Botic van der Zandschulp, who I'm very eager becomes a thing.
That is well pronounced, I think, Catherine.
Thank you very much.
I'm not about to try and repeat it.
I've been informed by Patrick Mouratoglou on Twitter that we all need to learn how to pronounce his name because he's going to be a thing. I suspect that's because he is associated with the Patrick Mouratoglou Academy. But there
did
we go.
Did he get in touch with you personally?
No.
Okay.
He was informing the tennis world, and by extension, the world, that we should all get used to saying Bottich van der Zandschlup. And actually, now we're doing it, I'm really enjoying saying that. So
I could do with a bit of a tutorial afterwards, if that's all right.
Alcaraz, this is via the ITF notes, is the first male player born in 2003 to win a Grand Slam match. And he's the youngest winner of a Grand Slam match since Tanasi Kokkinakis at the Australian Open in 2014.
It was
7 years ago that Kokkinakis made that breakthrough, and he won overnight, and he will now play Stefanos Tsitsipas in round number two, because Tsitsipas, who we thought would be given a headache by old Gilles Simon, he lost only four games, and probably the match, you know, aside from Tsitsipas being really, really good, is now going to be most remembered for the incredibly awkward post-match interview between Tsitsipas and Jim Courier on the court afterwards, and the heavy role played in that by the Rod Laver Arena crowd. Tsitsipas was asked, were you expecting to win that easily? And he answers, he's earnest, Stefanos Tsitsipas. He answers a straight question with a straight answer, and he said, I wasn't expecting it to come so easy, to be honest. I mean, none of us were. That is documented on this podcast multiple times. And the crowd started laughing at him and booing him, and he's not really equipped to kind of deal with that, is he, because he's so earnest. And captured on our Twitter beautifully by Hannah Wilkes, who was in charge of tweeting on the evening session, is Stefanos Tsitsipas doing a perfect replica of the grimace emoji. Oh God, what have I said? He's absolutely nailed it. And he just doesn't understand why they're booing him. And then sort of he's probed further by Jim Courier, and he says, I think I played great, a spectacular match from beginning to end. And then they started laughing at him again. And he goes, what am I even doing here? And then he says, I didn't even know what his tactic was. And he's trying to he's trying to explain what he means by saying, yeah, I didn't expect to win that easily. But the crowd are in hysterics by this point, and he just says, look, I can just leave if you want me to. I know. And then he's asked about the fact that he's playing Kokkinakis in the next round. And Jim Courier sort of says, well, you had the majority of the support tonight because of this fantastic Greek population in Melbourne. You know, Greek players generally do enjoy lots of support. Feels like you're a home player here. Lovely, lovely. But you're playing Kokkinakis next. And then he's asked, do you think you'll have the home support in that one? And Tsitsipas goes, well, I know Tanasi well. He's a really nice guy, but that won't matter on the court. and then he starts getting laughed at again. And he just can't cope with that kind of situation, can he? And then he comes to press really quickly after the match, 15 minutes, I think, after leaving the court. And he looked really confused and crestfallen. He looked upset. He looked really upset, actually. And he wasn't asked about it in the press conference. And I think he was relieved to get out of there without being asked about it. He was invited, dragged into the Kyrgios-Djokovic debate by some Australian journalists who have obviously, I mean, I haven't been to all the press conferences, but I presume they just want anybody of note to give them quotes on Kyrgios versus Djokovic. And Tsitsipas swerved it pretty well. I mean, he sort of said some stuff about Kyrgios, but nothing controversial, I don't think. Which kind of made me think, oh, so you are capable of swerving a swerving a question then. But bless him, he looked really shaken by it. I mean, nobody meant any ill by it. You know, Jim Courier didn't, the crowd didn't.
Or he needs to learn some techniques of some kind in order to handle it, because he's actually a wonderful interviewee. I love listening
to him.
No, I know, I understand that. But I mean, I love listening to him in certain forums. But I mean, we've seen it before in the interview on court at the O2, where he's just going off in all sorts of weird directions and it's really hard to understand what he's talking about. And you're talking to a crowd and they're not following it. And it's, look, I don't really know what the answer is there. But I did feel for him a bit. Yeah. Yeah.
I really felt for him. I mean, Catherine, you made the point. Put Roger Federer on that court and make him say the exact same first sentence that Tsitsipas said, and no one would have been laughing or gently booing him.
I'm not sure about that. You know, I think over the years, when Roger Federer has said sort of a kind of humble brag or whatever, people snigger. People snigger, and then they
maybe
go,
they would
oh,
have
it's,
laughed,
it's,
but they wouldn't have booed. God.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't. No, you're right.
I'm surprised.
A kind of context is everything. You know, because he's so earnest, he's never in on the jokes, it's a pass.
Mm, yeah.
And that does make it a bit different somehow. There's this sort of naivety to him, which is wonderful.
That's why I do feel maybe he could just learn a little bit about how to do it. You know, I don't want him to be media trained and stop being interesting and say nothing. Just there are little mechanisms to turn it around and be able to get out of there.
I mean, sometimes he does, but it's sort of by accident rather than by design, isn't it? Because he's not filtering anything. He's just being himself.
Yeah.
And I find himself really likable, but yeah, I really felt for it. Felt for him, and I suspect a lot of that crowd ended up probably feeling a bit regretful. They probably just didn't know him that well
look, when
didn't
you were
expect
reading those
it to
quotes,
go that way.
When you wrote those quotes, Catherine, I was laughing just now. You know, I can't deny it. It sounds funny. So I can't really have it both ways, but yeah. You know, I don't
it
know
was
what
the
to
booing
say
for me. The laughing was fine.
But you said, Catherine, I think he was okay afterwards, though, wasn't he? I mean, I think he'd, you know, it wasn't, I don't think it's scarred.
Yeah, I mean, I think he will be fine. But he, as I say, he came to press very quickly and he obviously was still a bit sort of in his head about it. You know, we know he's a dweller.
Yeah. You were perhaps going to do this anyway, but could you just a word on Kokkinakis? Because I always think back to that interview you did with him at Queen's 2 or 3 years ago about, I mean, even back then he'd had a terrible time, hadn't he? And he was very emotional in that interview you did with him. And I mean, it's not got any better, has it?
17 comebacks or attempted comebacks since then.
And he was crying on the court today while sitting down after the match. And he's such a lovely bloke. And I always remember back when he came on the scene with Kyrgios and Todd Woodbridge said, you know, I think of the two, Kokkinakis is the more talented, the more capable of packaging a game that could do damage. And he should have been, in my view, Kokkinakis alongside Zverev and all these guys right now.
And he's had to watch it all happen without him. Yeah.
Must be soul destroying. But good for him. He's in the second round of the Australian Open. Brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. We start with the second round in earnest on Wednesday, midnight UK time. And we start with Andreescu against Shea. Yes, yes, please. I will definitely be staying up for that one.
Which... We had a 10-minute discussion before the podcast, didn't we, about whether I could find a way to watch that without completely obliterating my sleep.
I've advised
plan.
A very hefty nap this afternoon. And then a wake up between sort of midnight and 2, and then an extra 2.5-3 hours after that. That is my recommendation.
Yeah,
and I am a sleep expert.
I know. Well, I'm not.
It's Stojanovic and Williams, Djokovic, Tiafoe, third on Rod Laver Arena. Then the night session is Garcia against Osaka. Yes, please. Although Matt gave short shrift to the suggestion that Garcia might be any kind of challenge to Osaka. Yes. I mean, Asalka is going to win, but then it's Maxim Cressy against Alexander Zverev, the Ivan Gulagong Arena, Sabalenka against Kazakina, then Kisteya Kvitova, Team Kupfer, and then the night session, Simona Halep against Ayla Tomljanovic, Grigor Dimitrov against Alex Bolt. Court three, the pick there is probably Shapovalov Tomic last up. I am interested to see the reception that Tomic gets because the mere mention of his name didn't go well in Shapovalov's post-match interview the other night. Auger Aliassime against Jack Duckworth?
James Duckworth.
Jack Duckworth is a character from Coronation Street, R.I.P. The 1573 Arena is where you'll find Riley Opelka tomorrow, David. He's last up.
Good, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Yeah. You'll be the only person watching that. And on the John Cainer Arena, which always features last on the order of play for some reason, so I have to scroll all the way down to find it, even though it's sort of technically the third court, that's where you'll find Stan Wawrinka and Martin Fucsovics, Venus Williams against Sara Errani, Iga Swiatek against Camilla Giorgi, and then Nick Kyrgios against Hugo Humbert. It's a great order of play overnight. And from about 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, which is when I schedule my alarm to wake up. It's when David goes on air with Five Live, isn't it? Or is it 8 o'clock, David? What time are you on air?
Seven.
Right. Great. That's when things will be just great. I think Kyrgios will be getting underway. Riley Opelka will be in full swing.
Exactly.
Osaka against Garcia. It's going to be a great watch, a great listen. Hopefully a great podcast, just as this one has been.
Yeah.
As I said, Crumble is our mascot. Hello, Crumble. You're great. Scousel Mousel is Matt's mascot. Zeus is mine. Sorry, Zeus, that I haven't been doing better with predictions, but I'm feeling confident about tomorrow. Rogue is David's mascot. Chris Albert Lee is our executive producer. And our shout-outs, Matt, are for...
For John Carlson.
Right, John.
Ooh, hello, John. Another potential Scandinavian.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was Kenneth Carlson, who was a tennis player. I wonder if there's any relation there. I mean, you know, there can only be a couple of Carlsons.
Dave is laughing at his own joke. Next one, Matt.
Next one is Vic K.
Ooh. Ooh.
A little bit incognito.
Vic. How are we spelling Vic?
V-I-K and then K.
Wow, that's cool, isn't it?
Wow, like yeah. That.
Go on, Vic. Yeah. Thanks for supporting us.
And finally, Laura Slattery.
Oh, we know Laura.
Yeah,
hello,
Laura's
Laura.
Ever so nice to us. We always like Laura.
Yeah.
Thanks
hello,
for Laura.
Laura. Thanks very much to everyone that supported us. We've got sort of a bigger team than we've ever had before working on this Australian Open, and it's really exciting for us. And thank you to Andrew and to Hannah that's helping us with our Twitter. I very much enjoy waking up and reading through our Twitter feed. It's one of my favourite things of the day. Finding out where in the world Matt has become famous overnight. Patrick's editing for us. Hello, Patrick. So, yeah, it's a treat and it wouldn't be possible without your support. So thanks very much. Sign up to our newsletter because it's great. I also love reading that. And we'll be back for another daily tennis podcast tomorrow. We'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.